The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. What a weekend of football, y'all. That was insane. Probably one of the greatest weekends of football I've ever watched in my entire life. And I don't think that's an over-exaggeration. But before I get to the weekend's events of football, I have like an America problem rant, I'll call it. Usually on my phone, my sports update app of choice I go with is Bleacher Report. Just that's the one I prefer. But one of my biggest pet peeves with them is that as part of their breaking news, they send you alerts like, oh, so-and-so tweeted this about that. Like, I don't give a flying fuck who tweeted what about what. I don't give a shit what LeBron James thinks on anything. Fucking tweet about that. That ain't no sports update. And I know this is dumb rant, but I'm sorry. Every time I see that shit on my phone, like, oh, so-and-so on Twitter said this. Or even when, like, when a game's going on and they're going, Twitter's blowing up over this play. I don't fucking care. I don't want that update. I want sports updates. I want breaking news updates. I mean, it's bad enough you give me fucking soccer and WNBA updates, but Jesus Christ, Twitter updates? Fuck that shit. But yeah, that's just a stupid little rant I had, and it's just something that always bothers me about Bleacher Report. So would you guys please stop updating me about Twitter, because I don't give a fuck. But something dope to talk about is this weekend's divisional playoff matchups. I mean, the word to use to describe these games is resilience, because every team that won this weekend showed resilience. They had a chance to be down and give up, and hell, even the teams that lost. Like, man, this was every single game came down to the last play, and that I can't remember a time in my life where that has happened. And you know, the playoffs are where it gets crazy and where shit happens. But like, I mean, last weekend, they were all blowouts. This weekend, it was like, who the fuck is going to win? I mean, there were so many back and forth games this weekend. It's like, I still can't believe what happened. But so let's kick it off with the first matchup. It ended up being the Bengals ended up beating the Titans 19-16. This was a close game the entire way through. And I mean, Derrick Henry, actually, he played a pretty solid game. I mean, he obviously wasn't going to have the same role he had that he normally has, because, I mean, he's coming off of a major injury, so not much you could do there. But I basically predicted kind of what was going to happen on that front line there was the Cincinnati Bengals offensive line, not that good. Tennessee Titans defensive line, really fucking good. Joe Burrow was sacked a total of 9 times. And they weren't just those like little sacks where you just like grab the dude's foot and he falls down. No, Joe Burrow was getting taken to the ground. And dude would get right back up. Like I said, the key word resilient. He would get right back up and he would come in and make the big plays that needed to be played or needed to be made. You know, they had to settle for a lot of field goals, but in the end, man, their defense picked them up. But also at the end of the day, Ryan Tannehill's mistakes. He threw 3 interceptions and each one of them ended up being costly, especially the last one. The Titans had a shot at the end of the game to get it going. And Ryan Tannehill ended up throwing that interception, and the Bengals ended up scoring in walk-off fashion and ended up winning the game. And good for the Cincinnati Bengals, man. I really like what I see from Joe Burrow. The dude is, he's got ice in his veins, and it's crazy to see this from a second-year quarterback. Just the way he passes the ball is just beautiful, and his confidence is something else. You know, they've got a big task coming up this next week, but this team is really good, and they just have a few holes to fill for next season, and this team is going to be a force for the next probably five-ish years at least. But the Bengals really took it to the Titans, and that was the way we started the weekend, was with a close matchup, and you're thinking, oh man, how can it get better than this? Well, it did. That same exact night, San Francisco 49ers shocked the Green Bay Packers in Green Bay, beat them 13-10. Now, it looked like when the game started, Green Bay took their first initial drive and took it right down the field, scored easily. It's looking like, oh shit, you know, Aaron Rodgers is going to have a great game. Well, the 49ers defense said, no, that's not going to happen, man. Nick Bosa, that dude is something else. I mean, he's coming off of an ACL injury last year, missed the majority of last year, and he's coming back strong this year, and he is getting at quarterbacks. And, you know, that 49ers defense, they really took it to them. And the Packers, I can't recall how many first downs they had, but they mostly had three and outs the majority of the time they were on the field. For the most part, this game was 7-3 for the longest time. And so I'm sitting there thinking, like, what's going to happen here? Are the Packers ever going to score? Because you're thinking, oh my God, they got to score at some point. They're at home. They got to do something. But it was a really cold night. And you really got to give it up to the 49ers, because they were getting thrown around. I mean, the Green Bay Packers defense was just killing their offense. I mean, when I mean killing, they would be picking their players up and throwing them into that freezing hard ground. And you could just tell with each and every hit that the 49ers offensive players were just doing what they could to just stay on the field as best they could. And I mean, you know, you got Debo Samuel hopping off on one leg. You got George Kittle. He's taking some big hits. Their offensive lineman, Trent Williams, he had to be carried out of the game. You know, Jimmy G's got a busted shoulder and a bad thumb. But they were able to maintain. And I mean, the big play of the game was that pump block by the San Francisco 49ers. And, you know, one weakness that I knew was going to rear its ugly head for the Packers was going to be their special teams. Both their kicker and their punting team and their kickoff unit, they're prone to mistakes, and they have been all season long. And I had a feeling that was going to be their downfall, and that ended up being their downfall in this game. As soon as San Francisco blocked that punt, scored that touchdown, and tied that shit up, you could just see the look on the Packers sideline. I mean, Matt LaFleur had this look of stunned amazement, like, I can't believe this shit just fucking happened. And when I saw that, I was like, the 49ers got this in the bag. And I mean, really, like I said, they were getting beat up, and to stand tall and to still keep it moving and to still get the win in the end, that was nuts. But I have a question for the San Francisco 49ers, and that is, do you really want to get rid of Jimmy G? I mean, don't get me wrong. He didn't light anybody up in that game, but the dude wins straight up. And now you are going to your second NFC championship game with him at quarterback. You could potentially be going to your second Super Bowl with him at quarterback. Are you really going to trade away this dude who has only won in the playoffs? Any chance he gets and he goes to the postseason, he wins. And you can't just find a quarterback anywhere. Yeah, they got Trey Lance on the bench for him, you know. But I don't really see it with Trey Lance. I don't, at least from what I've seen when he stepped on the field this year so far, and it wasn't a lot. And I mean, there could be room for growth, but Jimmy G has proven he can get you there. Jimmy G has proven that when he gets into the playoffs, he can win. And like I said, he's not going to blow you up. He is going to make some stupid mistakes here and there. But he's going to his second NFC championship game. So it's going to be very interesting to see, regardless of what happens next week, regardless of, hey, even if they win a Super Bowl, that's really going to throw a wrench into these plans. And the Niners got to do something, because their plan was to get rid of Jimmy G and then have Trey Lance be the starter this coming season. And they traded away a lot of draft picks for the next couple of years for Trey Lance. So you look at it and you kind of think they probably do have to do something because they aren't going to have any draft picks this year. And I think they were kind of banking on, yo, we're going to get rid of Jimmy G. Now, if they were to get rid of Jimmy G still this offseason, his stock has risen. And so they should get something decent in return for him. But I don't think you want to get rid of Jimmy G, not just because of the playoff wins, but also I could tell the locker room loves the dude. You know, George Kittle has nothing but great things to say about him, as well as everybody else. But I could tell he's got great chemistry with George Kittle. And I wonder if the Niners really are going to get rid of Jimmy G this offseason. I think you may want to at least give him one more chance, but we'll see what happens there. Still was a great game, and we'll see what they got during the conference championships. Then you roll into Sunday's games and you think, oh my God, these games from last night couldn't, there's no way Sunday's going to be better. Yeah, well, that was all changed when the Rams versus the Bucks game started. And the Rams ended up winning 30-27. But man, they started this game and they were just kicking the crap out of the Bucks. I mean, the Bucks were... The offense couldn't get started. The ground game couldn't get started. Tom Brady's throwing interceptions. And, I mean, they really got lucky because Cam Akers fumbled the ball, like, right before halftime, or else they would have been, I think, up, like, 24-3 at half. So it was a runaway at first. But you're looking at it, and you're like, well, Tom Brady has come back from worse. So you can't really count them out. And even though they weren't getting it going... even when they came back out after halftime, I'm still like, come on, man, it's Tom Brady. You can't ever count Tom Brady out. And as the game starts going on, well, shoot, the Rams turn it over. And then, you know, the Bucks score, so it's kind of looking like it might be a game. But then in the fourth quarter, there's this play where Tom Brady fumbles the ball. And you're like, oh, shit, this is game. Next play, ball. Right into Stafford's chest on the snap, boop, and the Bucks get the ball right back, and they fucking tie shit up. And I'm just like, this is really happening. This is really happening. Tom Brady is about to shit on every haters weekend this weekend. They were all getting all up in arms like, ah, Tom Brady go lose, Tom Brady go lose. I already heard all you haters, and I was laughing like, oh shit, the GOAT about to do it again. But Matthew Stafford and that offense really stepped it up. And that Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense really let them down in the end there. And, you know, Matthew Stafford just took two bombs down the field, set them up right in perfect field goal range for a nice walk-off into the NFC Conference Championships to bring it down to LA for a chance to possibly play at home in the Super Bowl. That would be crazy if 2 years in a row, last year Tampa played the Super Bowl in Tampa and won it there. How crazy would it be if the LA Rams end up playing the Super Bowl in LA? That would be crazy. But, I mean, they did everything they could to try and give that game away back to the Bucks. Because really, honestly, the Bucks had no business getting back into that game. They played flat the entire game. It's just the Rams, they're kind of notorious this season for blowing it. And we'll see what they got coming up in the conference championships. But offensively, they are rolling right now. I mean, OBJ is fitting right in. Tyler Higbee is having a phenomenal season. You know, Cooper Kupp, he's the wide receiver's triple crown man, and he made the big plays when he needed to. He did have a fumble, which did help the Bucs get back into the game, but, you know, that team was resilient, like I said, and they were able to overcome those mistakes that they ended up making to get the Bucs back into it. But they walk away with the win, a huge, huge win. And, you know, who knows, that could possibly end up being Tom Brady's last game. I don't think so. I don't think that's the way he wants to end his career. But he's going to be 45. You can't blame the dude if he ends up going, but you also can't blame the dude if he comes back. I hope he comes back just because I know it's going to piss a hater off. And I love when a hater gets pissed off. But then the last game of Sunday was the best game. Chiefs over Bills, 42-36. I mean, this game was out of control from the start. You know, I mean, it was back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. For a while there, in the second and third quarter, I was worried about the Bills because they weren't playing like they normally play. They had a few fourth downs that were like fourth and four, fourth and one, and they ended up punting. And that's actually uncharacteristic for them. And usually they would go for those. And I kind of think they should have. There's a few mistakes along the way that the Bills made prior to overtime that they could have won this game. And for some reason in the second and third quarter, I mean, the defense wasn't playing at all. They weren't playing well at all that entire game. Now, granted, they were playing against Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill and that offense, but they couldn't make a tackle all night. I mean, the pocket that Patrick Mahomes had to work with last night was just phenomenal. His offensive line worked wonders for him, and they were able to get the smallest little crease for him to get on out because, man, the Bills would be surrounding him. But his offensive line would get him a little crease. He'd get on out, and you would think, oh, shit, they're going to sack Patrick Mahomes. And nope, he'd get on out, and he would run for the first down, or he would get it out to one of his receivers. Regardless, that Chiefs offense was unstoppable last night. They didn't have one flaw in that offense last night. It was like Tyreek Hill had like a rocket launcher attached to him because he was running so fast and nobody could tackle him. And, you know, Travis Kelce, he made the big play in overtime when he needed to. But with the Bills in the second and third quarter, and kind of the fourth quarter a little bit, not really until the end, but they wouldn't open it up. And that's what they do. And I mean, when you have Josh Allen, that guy has one of the most beautiful passes you will ever see in the NFL. It's so pure. It's so precise. And it's like a rocket. And, with that kind of a quarterback, you can score in a matter of seconds, which they did when it was the last 2 minutes of the fourth quarter. But it was just so weird. They were throwing in these random running plays that they normally don't use, and they were just very out of sync for the second and third quarter. But the fourth quarter, with a minute 54 left to go, the Chiefs and the Bills are just going back and forth. It's Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes. 25 points were scored in the last minute 54. And when the Bills scored their last touchdown, there's 13 seconds left on the clock. And I'm thinking to myself, like at first I'm like, oh, there's 13 seconds on the clock. This is cool. I'm like, oh, wait a second. I just been watching how great the Chiefs offense has looked all night. Also, the Chiefs are known to score real fucking quick. And I'm like, 13 seconds on the clock for the Chiefs is actually quite a bit of time. So let's see what happens here. And they've got one of the best kickers in the league. Yeah, Butker missed a few kicks last night, but he made the one that mattered. And so what the Bills should have done is they should, instead of on the kickoff, just kicking it straight through the end zone, they should have kicked it straight down the field, let it bounce a little bit to at least take a few seconds off the clock. Usually the bounces take about 4 to 6 seconds off the clock, depending on what happens, whether there's a run back or how quick anybody gets tackled. But regardless, you want to take some time off the clock, especially when you have Patrick Mahomes on the other end of the fucking field, ready to come out and play on offense. And this dude has been lighting you up all night, and your defense is tired as fuck. I don't know what the Bills were thinking in coverage either on these last couple of plays and with 13 seconds, but basically Patrick Mahomes does what Patrick Mahomes does. He gets the ball out there quick and gets the ball to his receivers, and they make two quick plays to set them up in decent field goal range. I believe it was like a 42-yarder, 45-yarder, something in that range. And Butker can easily get that, especially at home. He's used to that. So he makes it. We go into overtime. Now I know, there's a couple of things I know about overtime. Number one, in this game, I knew whoever won the coin flip in overtime, whoever got that ball first was driving down the field, and they weren't getting a field goal, they were getting a touchdown. That's what I knew, just because that's how that last night's game was going. It was touchdown or nothing for each of these teams. And with how hot they both were and how their defenses were, they were tired. They were tired as fuck. So I knew whoever won this coin toss was taking it down the field and scoring a touchdown. Well, it ended up being Kansas City. And now I knew when Kansas City won the coin toss, I said tomorrow morning after Patrick Mahomes drives him down the field, scores a touchdown, everybody's going to be crying about Josh Allen not getting a chance in overtime. And it's just been the big gripe of mine is listening to people bitch and complain about overtime rules. The way I see it is overtime is extra time. And if you don't do the right things during the first four quarters, then overtime is just overtime. And if the other team scores, that's on your defense to do something. Or that's on your special teams on the kickoff to force a fumble. I mean, there are many things that can happen regardless of who gets the ball first. And a lot of people don't like that if you score a touch, if you receive the first possession and on offense and you score a touchdown, the game's over. But if you score a field goal, the other team has an opportunity to take it down the field and either tie it up or score a touchdown and win. But everybody always has a problem with this every year when it happens. It always happens in the playoffs, usually at some point. But every single year, it's always like, oh, why didn't Josh Allen get the ball back? Oh, why didn't Patrick Mahomes get the ball back? Oh, why didn't Peyton? I mean, like, this has literally been the rallying cry of the crybaby loser forever. Overtime can't last forever, and it is what it is. Do better. Do better in the first four quarters. And if you can't, if your defense can't stop Patrick Mahomes, which they couldn't do all night, that is on y'all. And the Bills had multiple chances during the first four quarters to step it up and get the win. So it's not on Patrick Mahomes to fucking score a touchdown and then say, oh, here you go, guys. Here's the ball. Let's see what you do. Rah, rah, ree. That's not them. That's not what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to rip your fucking throat out and murder your fucking feelings on Sunday night football. That's what they're supposed to do. It's the goddamn playoffs. And I mean, people just don't get it. You can't extend overtime longer than it is. I mean, the players are already spent. They're already shot, especially on defense. But I mean, in a game like that, I can't even imagine how sore everybody is today. But at the end of the day, Patrick Mahomes drove it down the field easily on that Buffalo Bills defense and threw it to Travis Kelce, and they ended up winning that game on the last minute touchdown. But back to that 13 seconds and the Buffalo Bills defense. They played it really like they only wanted to prevent the touchdown. They weren't really playing the sidelines, and they weren't playing the middle of the field. What they should have done is just played defense, normal defense, like you would have played on Patrick Mahomes the whole game. But unfortunately, that's just the way the cookie crumbles, and the Chiefs are moving on to their fourth straight AFC Conference Championship game. And it is well-earned and well-deserved, and I wouldn't be shocked to see them winning the Super Bowl yet again. So that was a crazy weekend of football. It was an amazing weekend of football. We can only hope it gets better. Although, since it was so great this past weekend, I imagine the Super Bowl is probably going to be like a blowout or something just to balance it all out. But this season has been great, and that was a great way to cap off the playoffs, man. And we are in good hands with some good quarterbacks here, with Joe Burrow and Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen. I mean, the league is in good hands with the future of the quarterback position. And with that being said, it's like you got Aaron Rodgers lost. yet again in the playoffs. I mean, it's kind of funny that everybody likes to sit here and talk about, ooh, the Lambeau mystique. They were talking about it all season long, and I'd be just like thinking to myself, do y'all not like really look into the history of the last few years, or actually the last like 10, 15, 20 years at the Packers in the playoffs in Lambeau Field? They actually haven't fared very well. I mean, last year, the perfect example, they got beat by the Buccaneers at home. There's just been many years that they've done it. I mean, hell, remember 2007, New York Giants? This is when Brett Favre was still playing for the Packers. And New York Giants squeaked right into the playoffs, were a pretty awful team for the regular season, but were able to put together a great playoff run, walk right into Green Bay in a snowy, cold-ass night, and absolutely obliterate Brett Favre and the Packers to go on to win the Super Bowl and beat the undefeated Patriots. So the Lambeau mystique is actually just some made-up fucking bullshit that everybody has to discuss, because there is no Lambeau mystique during the playoffs. And Aaron Rodgers, it's up in the air whether the dude's going to retire or not. I wouldn't be surprised if he retired, just because, it is a lot to, over the years, he hasn't won a Super Bowl in 12 years now. 12 years was when last time he won the Super Bowl. He's only been one time. Now, granted, hey, only, you can't really say that, just because getting to the Super Bowl is a big deal, and winning the Super Bowl is even more difficult to do. So getting one Super Bowl, yeah, I feel you. But he plays for Super Bowls, and he can't be happy with how his team has ended the last two seasons. But, I mean, really, if you think about it, it's been the last 12 seasons that he hasn't been able to put anything together with this team. So, and I don't know about Matt LaFleur. I mean, he's doing great during the regular season, but I've noticed during the playoffs, he tends to make some really odd decisions. And like I said, that blocked punt, he's the leader of the team. And when I saw the look of shock on his face, that's what really took it where I was like, oh, the 49ers got this, because the Packers aren't resilient enough to come back from such a downer like that. And that's why I really question LaFleur. I mean, he's had a couple of blunders during the playoffs throughout his three seasons of coaching the Packers. So we'll see what happens with him. We'll see what happens with Rodgers. And then, you know, Tom Brady, he with the Bucs losing yesterday, who knows? I mean, there's rumors that he may not come back next year. Now, I think he's going to come back next year. He had a career year, which says a lot for a 44-year-old dude who's been in the league for 20 years now, you know, and he's achieved basically everything you can achieve. And when he's a dude who's led the league in passing yards this year, in touchdowns and completions, it's like he's still playing at a high level, so there's really no reason for him to retire. And if the Buccaneers, you know, if they add some pieces, which, I mean, come on, to go play with Tom Brady, that's not going to be a difficult thing to draw new players to the team for whatever they need to fix next year. So I don't really see Brady retiring, but it did get me thinking. So Roethlisberger looks like he hasn't said he's retiring. He hasn't officially announced it or anything. I'm sure he's still taking time, but from the way he played and from how the way the season ended and his final address to everybody on the last playoff game, it looks like this is Roethlisberger's last year. And what if Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers were to retire this year? That means three first ballot Hall of Famers retiring in the same year. That would be a crazy Hall of Fame year for induction. I mean, wow. That's, you got seven rings for Brady, two rings for Roethlisberger, and one ring for Rodgers. That's 10 fucking rings right there. 10 rings. And then some other NFL news. Sean Payton, the coach of the New Orleans Saints, they're saying he's not really sure if he's coming back next year. It's the timing of it is very odd. And also, too, the owner, she came out today and said, yeah, this is true. We don't know if Sean Payton's coming back next year, which is very intriguing to me, because now I know I said last week I'm not for firing Mike McCarthy as the Cowboys coach. I think 2 years is not long enough, especially when the first year was ruined because of Dak's injury. But if Sean Payton's who we're going after, well, then I'm all in favor of firing Mike McCarthy, because that is an improvement right there. And the reason why I say the timing of this is odd is because this whole last week, you know, Jerry Jones, I don't think really cares much what most people think, especially in the media. I think he just cares if people are talking about the Cowboys, the brand, him, because that does earn him more money. That's actually how the Cowboys, one of the reasons why the Cowboys are the biggest brand in the world, especially sports-wise. So he knows what he's doing. But I think he does care when ex-players, ex-coaches, and players who used to play for him when he owned the team, I think he cares. And when Troy Aikman and Emmitt Smith and Darren Woodson and Charles Haley and Michael Irvin and Jimmy Johnson and, you know, old dudes he won with, when they come out and say things, I think he listens. And I wouldn't be shocked if he has been speaking to Sean Payton behind the scenes and trying to see, gauge his interest on coming to Dallas and coaching Dallas. Apparently, Sean Payton's just not happy in New Orleans anymore because, I mean, obviously, after Drew Brees retired, the quarterback situation is awful right now for the Saints. And who knows what this offseason is going to hold. I mean, with Aaron Rodgers, you don't know if he's going to retire or if he's going to stay with the Packers or where he's going to go. You don't know about Russell Wilson. You don't know about Derek Carr. This year's draft for quarterbacks is kind of weak. And all they have right now is Trevor Siemian, Taysom Hill, and Jameis Winston. And not one of them is appealing, in my opinion. And I'm shocked that he wants to leave. But at the same time, I'm really not, because they seem to be losing a lot of pieces right now. And the Saints had a good run there, but it looks like their run may come to an end depending on what happens here with Sean Payton. And even if they keep Sean Payton, who knows what they're going to do? I mean, they got to get that quarterback position. They got to get everything worked out there. So that's what's going on in the NFL right now. So let's get to the top 10 NBA power rankings. A lot changed this week in basketball. There was some movement, especially in my top 10, and there's even a couple teams in there where I'm like, whoa. And so we'll see what's going on with my top 10 here. So my top 10 here. Number one team, I've still got the Phoenix Suns, 36-9. They are on a six-game winning streak, and they've actually gone 9-1 in their last 10 games. They are on fire. Even when, Booker didn't have that great of a game the other night, but still, they were able to step it up, and, they've got the longest winning streak in the NBA right now, and they just look like, they look like they're on fire. They look like they're about to win a championship, in my opinion. Then at number two, I've got the Golden State Warriors still holding it strong. They're at 34-13. Klay Thompson, he looks to be back to form. Steph Curry, about two, three weeks ago, the Warriors kind of were slumping a little bit, but they got back on a hot streak this week, and Klay and Steph are looking like the Splash Brothers yet again. So it's going to be interesting to see how well this team looks when Draymond Green gets back in there. Number three, I got the Bucks moving on up. They have won three games in a row for a 30-19 record. They are, I think, like a half game, two games out of the first place in the East. So they're working their way back up. They've been having to work through the injuries, which has been their problem. But they're out East. Honestly, it doesn't really matter where you end up in the East. As long as you get in and you're the Bucks, they should be good. And the Bucks are looking real good this year. Then at number four, the Grizzlies got bumped down a spot at 32-17. Really just because they've had a couple of losses this last week, and that's really it. They still look good. They're still solid. They've been 7-3 in their last 10 games. Ja Morant continues to shine. He's only getting better with each and every game. This team's getting better with each and every game, and they play some real solid defense. So I've got the Grizzlies at four. Number five, I moved the Heat on up because they are playing some really nice basketball right now. Jimmy Butler, he had a great week last week. He passed, I think, for the all-time scoring or something, or most like triple-doubles or something for Miami Heat. That LeBron, it was a record that LeBron owned, and he passed that when they beat the Lakers last week. So right now the Heat, they are the first place team in the East right now as well. Number six, Dallas Mavericks. I've got them storming on up. They are 27-20 right now. They are 8-2 in their last 10 games, and they are just killing it. Luka Doncic, since he came back from injury, it took him a minute to get back into it, but he is getting back into it, and he's really dominating this team. Like I said, it would be really nice to see them see the Mavericks get somebody else out there to help him. I don't know if it's going to happen this year. I don't know if they've got any moves to be made during the trade deadline, but right now, Dallas Mavericks playing some excellent defense, and I've got them at number six. Number seven, I've got the Philadelphia 76ers, who had a great week as well. They're 27-19. Joel Embiid went off last week. He had 50-plus points in one game. Then the other games, he had 30 points. I mean, he's just really, really dominating every team he plays against right now. And the 76ers just seem to be getting stronger. Only problem I have with the 76ers is, why have we not traded away Ben Simmons? You are just like wasting time. You're wasting energy. Get rid of the dude and get something in exchange for him. I mean, right now your team is flying high. Maybe you could go get somebody out there. I don't know who's available. I don't know what they'd be looking for, but it's definitely better than a bench warmer who does not want to be playing for your team. Trade away Ben Simmons. What the fuck are you doing, 76ers? Number eight team, I got the Brooklyn Nets. Ever since KD got injured, they've been having issues. Overall this season, they've been up and down, but they're still a good team. Once KD gets back, I still expect them to be a solid team. I expect them to make more of their noise in the postseason as opposed to the regular season. But they did not have a good week. They haven't really been playing well, so they dropped a little bit in my top 10. Number nine, another team that dropped in my top 10 really far, are the Chicago Bulls. And they're falling in the Eastern Conference as well. The injuries are just piling up. Now Alex Caruso, he's going to be out for a couple of months. He just broke his wrist. And I'll tell you what, Caruso is a great player. He helped the Lakers win the 2020 championship. He's a scrappy guy, and he's been a huge part of why they're playing so well this season. So they lost him. Zach LaVine does come back tonight, but we'll see what happens without Lonzo Ball and Caruso. Those are two big parts of this Bulls team, who's 3-7 in their last 10 games. So they started off the season real hot, and they're still in second place out east, but they are falling faster. Now my number 10 team, which I can't believe is number 10, it's the Cleveland Cavaliers. I don't know where the fuck this team came from. Honestly, I haven't really paid much attention to the Cavaliers. You know, during football season, I'm pretty much all NFL. And then I pay attention to what's going on in the NBA, but mostly from my team. Mostly care about what's going on with the Lakers. And then, you know, I'll catch a game here and there. But since the Cavaliers have been straight trash for quite some time, ever since LeBron left, I didn't expect to see them doing anything, but I've been looking at their stats. They're one of the best defensive teams in the league, and they've actually won 6 out of their last 7 games, so I put them at number 10. I don't know what they're doing. I honestly couldn't name a player on their roster at this current point in time. I think I'm going to have to start doing a little bit more research on this Cleveland Cavaliers team, but yeah, I was shocked. I had to put them in there as soon as I was like, wow, they won 6 out of their last 7. I think I got to put them at number 10 at least. So let's see what this Cavs team does. But I was really surprised to see that how well they're doing. I don't know what they're doing, but they're doing it well, at least for now. And then my Lakers still suck. But Anthony Davis is apparently going to be returning tomorrow. Hopefully that can last for the rest of the season. The Lakers really need him. I don't know how much of a difference it's going to make. But, we'll see what happens with good old Anthony Davis returning. Then college basketball top 25 dropped today. I'll just go over the top 10. Number one, first time ever in the history of this college, Auburn Tigers, 18-1. This team is so fucking good. Bruce Pearl has turned this team into a legit contender. I would be shocked if they don't win the national championship. Now, we got a long way to go, and the tournament, anything can happen in the tournament, but I just got to say, the Auburn Tigers ain't nothing to fuck with. They are a damn good team. And, yeah, if you don't remember Bruce Pearl, he used to coach Tennessee. I can't remember why he left there, if it was for controversial reasons, like recruiting, or the team started to suck. I can't recall. But regardless, Auburn has him now. And he's really turned this basketball program around. I mean, usually the SEC is known for football, but they are not known for basketball. Sometimes here and there, you'll get LSU will have a good year, or somebody else in Florida will have a good year. Usually that's like the best SEC team is Florida, for basketball at least. But SEC is mostly about football. But Auburn, watch out for Auburn. Number two, Gonzaga, they're 15-2. They're playing great. That's another team to watch out for. Arizona, 16-1. They continue to dominate like they always do. That's usually who you see in the top 10. Is our Pac-10 teams, our Pac-12 teams. Then you got Baylor at number 4, 17-2. Kansas at 5, 16-2. They've been winning a few games here and there, so they've moved on up, I think, two spots. Number 6 right now is Purdue, 16-3. Houston's number 7 at 17-2 record. UCLA is also number 7. I honestly don't know why you rank teams at the same spot, but UCLA's there at 13-2. And Duke is number 9 at 15-3, having a pretty solid season in Coach K's last year, although they did get beat by FSU the other night. So they're sending Coach K out with a nice bang there. We'll see what they do in the tournament this year. But they're doing a lot better than they were last year, that's for sure. And then rounding out the top 10 is Michigan State at 15-3. And when I gave my Longhorns a compliment last week, they promptly turned around and lost a fucking game. They did get a win on Saturday after that. But after a win and a loss, the Longhorns are no longer ranked. Now, luckily, in college basketball, it's a lot different with rankings than it is in college football, because college football rankings actually do matter for playoff spots and such. But in college basketball, we all know it's about the tournament. So all you got to do is make the tournament, and you're golden. And a couple of quick hits in baseball. Tomorrow, the players' union and the owners are supposed to meet again for a lockout meeting. Supposedly it's positive. I don't really pay attention to a lot of this shit. All I really care about is, you know, because most of it's stuff that it doesn't really affect any of us. It affects contracts and money and revenues and free agency. And yes, they do change some of the rules. Like, there's a possibility where they might use a universal DH moving forward. But, I mean, any of that kind of stuff, it's really just all I care about is hearing that we're going to have baseball again. So hopefully tomorrow's a positive meeting. Hopefully tomorrow means we might be getting some baseball back pretty soon, because I'm sick of waiting for it. And we've already had two seasons in a row get fucked over by COVID. And, you know, I'd also like to know when I need to start my fantasy baseball team, because my fantasy baseball league, we get pretty crazy in there, and it's very competitive, and I already know some of them are asking, like, yo, Katie, when you starting the league back up? Yeah, y'all, I started back up, but it's like, we ain't got no we don't know if we got baseball going again this year, but come on, MLB, don't fuck us over. We already got fucked these last 2 years. Come on. And then the last thing with baseball is something that usually pisses me off every year. The Hall of Fame announcements will be tomorrow, if they let anybody in. Last year, they didn't vote for anybody. And I have my own gripes with the Baseball Hall of Fame, most especially. They are the most provincial scumbag voters you will ever meet. They constantly hold back players from being inducted into the Hall of Fame for the dumbest fucking reasons all the time. And the fact that they have years where they don't even induct somebody is so, it just really angers me. And I kind of have a feeling I'll probably be saving this rant more for Friday, after we find out if anybody makes it this year. But I have plenty of gripes about it. But the Hall of Fame voters are like the worst scumbags on the face of this fucking planet. They hold everything against you. If you just walked by them in the locker room and happened to accidentally fart at them, they're going to hold it against you until the day you die. And then they're going to be like, I'm not voting you into the Hall of Fame. You accidentally farted at me at that one time in the locker room. How dare you do that to me? And I'm not kidding. These are the dumb, they make the most ridiculous reasons why they don't let people into the Hall of Fame. And they also, the limit that they have on how many years you're eligible for, that shit pisses me off too. So I have many, many, many gripes about the Hall of Fame. And I imagine I'm going to have many, many more gripes on Friday about it. And probably every single year when we get around to this, because usually it really angers me how ridiculous they are on their standards of getting into the Baseball Hall of Fame, because we're the writers. It's just ridiculous that in every Hall of Fame, I think this should be the rule for every single Hall of Fame, whether it be for baseball, basketball, football, whatever sport. I think voting should include players who used to play or who at least are in the Hall of Fame. So, like, for example, if you're voting for the Pro Football Hall of Fame, they would pick maybe a select few Hall of Famers who are still alive, who maybe you would have like a certain criteria for them. I don't know what the criteria would be, but it's criminal to me that actual players who are in the Hall of Fame, who actually know how to play the game, who actually put their bodies on the line and know what it takes to win championships or lose championships or know what it's like to be on the field, those are the people who should have a say in it. Now, I'm not saying you completely get rid of the writers, because the writers do play a part. They were there too. They know your stats and all of that trash too, but I always have a gripe with every Hall of Fame in certain areas, but the Baseball Hall of Fame most especially. So get ready for Friday. I'm sure I'm going to have a rant. Maybe they'll surprise me. Maybe they will surprise me and they won't be dicks, but I have a feeling that's not going to be the case. But if anything, they better at least vote somebody in, because it's ridiculous that they didn't vote anybody in last year. So, yeah, fuck the Baseball Hall of Fame. I would love to go visit the Baseball Hall of Fame for 100% sure. Love baseball, and I love that kind of shit. But, man, their voters are scumbags. So, yeah, that's how we're going to end today's episode. Talk to you guys on Friday when we talk some NFL conference championships. Enjoy the week of sports, y'all.